The time has come.
I like that.
The time is now. For Victoria Stilwell's Positively Podcast. She's a world-renowned dog trainer.
Seen enough dogs today, have you?
She's the host of It's Me or the Dog.
I'm coming to train you.
Along with co-host Holly Ferver.
You don't play around with that name, do you?
I am a fan of Shreddy Balls.
She's Victoria Stilwell, and she's ready to go.
This is a lovely way to start the day.
You get the busy bee. I need to trim her whiskers.
I see some poo here.
I feel a little bit better now because I'm the only one who usually feels stupid during the podcast.
Now, let's head to the studio and get this Positively Podcast started.
Welcome back to the podcast, everybody. It's Victoria Stilwell here with my wonderful co-host, Holly Ferber. How are you, Holly?
I'm doing well. I put my best lipstick on for you today. I'm ready to go.
Everybody can see it. That's why podcasts are so wonderful.
I like that we're wearing flannel. We forgot to tell Lisa, flannel podcast today. What's happening?
I do have flannel on. I do.
Oh, you do? Okay, good.
So we have our wonderful guest, Lisa Wagner, on, and she's going to be talking about separation anxiety, which I know is an issue that a lot of people have with their dogs. But first of all, Holly, how's your week been?
It's been good. It's been chilly and cold, but it's great. And as of today, I'm on vacation until January 2nd. So, I mean, I do have a little work to do, but I don't have to wake up at O'Dark 100 and get it done. So all is great. How about you?
And, you know, it's been good. I've just been working and waiting until, you know, Christmas season comes. But I know that people, viewers, unless you're going to be watching on Positively TV or YouTube, that I have these very special pants on today that are basically, I get cold, and especially when you're working in front of the computer, you get chilly. So how can I stay warm? I have found the best things ever. They're fleece training pants. They look terrible.
What do you mean training? Hang on, training pants, like for dog trainers?
No, well, like, no, you know, when they call them training pants. I don't know why they do that. I didn't even question it, because I'm telling you, if you go out in these, you're going to look really, really stupid. People are going to look at you and go, what is she wearing? But they call them training pants. I don't understand. Very comfortable and very warm. And yeah, so that's what I'm doing to combat the cold. I do not like the cold. I do not like the dark evenings. But you know what? Hey, we shouldn't complain.
I'll tell you that I'm from Chicago, so I have bear genus in me. Like, I'm part of the bear genus and so it's amazing. Like, I walk a lot, I exercise a lot, I've been doing well, eating and drinking. Okay, maybe not so well eating and drinking, but I try. In my mind, I'm doing well. And I'm just like, bloop, bloop. It's like winter. It doesn't matter. My body goes, oh, it's 40 degrees. Pack on 20 pounds. And but then like in the spring, it's like, oh, we got to about 60. So, but it takes the whole summer to get it off. And then I finally get it off, and it's like October 12th. And it's like, look it, you're finally looking good. And then boom, 40 degrees. It's crazy.
It is crazy. It's crazy. And I don't know. I mean, isn't that sort of survival? Isn't that survival? We've all got to pack on the pounds and like give ourselves an extra layer of warmth.
Where are you located, Lisa? Where are you now?
I'm in the western tip of North Carolina. So it's really been kind of warm here. We've had a couple of cold days, and tomorrow's going to be cold. Our high is going to be in the 30s. Low is going to be about 19. But I get cold very easily too. So I live in, you know, fleece pants and fleece shirts and fleece vests and fleece jackets. And I have been known many times to work with here at the computer with fleece, you know, fleece blanket over my lap.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Victoria,
I don't like to be cold.
Victoria has a nice new blanket.
I do have a nice new blanket. So I want it at book club.
I'm telling the truth. I'm gonna spill all. So we do this white elephant exchange at book club, and I had gotten this really cool pair of earrings, and she had gotten this really great fleece blanket, and it got stolen from her. So we cut a deal, and she stole my earrings, and I stole the blanket for her, and then we traded afterwards.
I love it.
Sesame Street calls that cooperation.
It is. So
all good. Yeah.
And you know what? It really does. We had to adapt a lot, because of course we can't gather inside. We have to be socially distant outside. We have to wear our masks. And if you're going to attend anything, really, anything, whether it be with family members or anything, you have to be outside. To be safer, you have to be outside. So that's where we were, outside in 46-degree weather with very windy, but there we are in our hats and our gloves and our scarves and our, I'm telling you, I'm getting out my ski gear now. Because if we are going to see people, and we really are not, I mean, we really are keeping, becoming a hermit, actually. But if you are going to go outside and meet up with family or anything, make sure you're safe, do it at a distance, and then make sure you're warm.
You know, I don't know if you, my favorite movie is A Christmas Story. I watch that movie a million times, whether it's Christmas or not. And I'm about to bring out a snowsuit like Brandy, you know, the kid, and he's like, he can't put his arms down, and then he falls, he can't get up. I don't care. It was that cold last night. And we sat by a fire, and I woke up this morning and I was like, I'm suddenly having a craving for s'mores. But it was nice. We did it safely and it was a lot of fun. And it's good to see people. I mean, for our mental well-being. Mm-hmm. And you know what? It's interesting because I know this is we talk a lot about dogs, and it's glaringly clear to me that when people don't walk their dogs, take them to dog parks, they go stir crazy in the house in their own backyard. I was guilty of that once where I was like, this big backyard, the dogs will be fine. And Victoria's like, yeah, it's beautiful, but you get bored looking at it. And the same thing with us in COVID. We get bored staring at the same four walls. Imagine your dog that can't say to you, can I have a change of scenery? Or I'm tired of staring at that same stone wall in the backyard.
It's so true.
It makes a lot of sense.
Finally, people are going to realize what their dogs are going through.
Yeah.
And now we enjoy car rides as much as our dogs do.
Even a trip to the grocery store has become really exciting because it's literally the only ever time that we go out.
I know. I did the grocery run the other day myself, and it's like I'm seeing people, I'm nodding to people, I'm smiling, you know, behind my mask, but just that I gained so much energy from that short trip to the grocery store. It was great.
My mom had a birthday on Tuesday, and I said, so Mom, what'd you do? She goes, oh, we had a great day. I said, yeah. She goes, Dad made me breakfast and then we went to the grocery store. And I was like, and my mom's high risk because she's got an autoimmune disease. So I was like, oh, but she was so excited. She had her mask on, she had her glove on, she had her goggles on because she has no immune system. So she was all excited. She goes, we went to the grocery store. It was really fun. I was like, oh, but I get it. I was like, good. And she even bought herself some extra treats, you know, in the dessert aisle.
I love it.
You know, if this pandemic has taught us anything, it's taught us that to kind of focus on the little things that we take for granted. We've always taken for granted. Who would have thought that a trip to the grocery store actually becomes stimulating, actually becomes an event?
And you know what? And it brings up our topic today of separation anxiety. So
it does.
This is perfect because we are at home 24/7 with our dogs and cats and ferrets and birds and rabbits now. And they're so used to us. And I'll tell you, because I have an older dog who I like and I love, you know, but we're becoming so bonded where I'm becoming almost codependent on him that, you know, I crave to be with him all the time. And he's right here sleeping. He is never without, you know, farther than 10 feet away from me at any moment of any time. And so it concerns me a little bit when I go back to work at some point, because you can't explain to them, look, that was unusual. I'm sorry. I have to go to work to make money. They're making me go to an office now that I have a vaccine. This is going to be a problem, I think, for dogs who maybe didn't have separation anxiety before, I would imagine.
Absolutely. And that's why I'm excited to have Lisa Wagner with us today. She is from Cold Nose College, and she's also one of our faculty members of the Victoria Stillwell Academy. And she's a certified separation anxiety trainer. And I thought she'd be perfect to talk about this subject because she has a lot of experience in it. And yes, I mean, Lisa, first of all, welcome to the podcast. I'm so glad you can join us.
Victoria. Thanks for having me, and great to see you again, Holly.
Yes, you too.
And you've been doing this for a very long time. You've been doing virtual consultations way before virtual consultations have become popular since COVID. But could you tell us a little bit about what a certified separation anxiety trainer does and how you treat separation anxiety, and then tell us what it is?
Great. Thanks. Yes, definitely. So, you know, just like becoming a dog trainer, I didn't really mean to become a dog trainer. It fell on my lap because of a dog that I had, as many dog trainers find their profession because of a challenging dog. And this was the death of a dog. And then I was in a career change from a brick and mortar training facility to going back to all in-home training when, you know, I said kind of out loud to the universe, I really would like to do virtual work again, because in my prior life, I had worked only virtually. And so the stars aligned to introduce me to Melinda DeMartini, who has been working separation anxiety cases solely for about 30 years. And she was putting together a curriculum to train experienced trainers to use the protocol that she was using that she had found to be successful with helping dogs recover. So I was one of the first five trainers to go through that program, came out of it knowing that I loved that type of work. I already knew I loved behavior consulting. I liked that intimate long-term relationship with a client and helping guide that client through to resolution of their dog's behavior issue. So the fact that I could focus on one specific behavior issue, and I like to say behavior issue or behavior challenge and not behavior disorder. It is just a behavior. It happens to be an irrational anxiety and irrational fear, but it is just a behavior. So I don't like to call it a disorder. So I came out of that program feeling well equipped and well prepared to work with dogs who have separation anxiety and work with clients. And it became my specialty. That was 6 years ago.
So you work virtually. And you know, before this, trainers especially, and people were like, how, when you do virtual consultations, how can you train a dog from a computer screen? But now we're all doing it because of the pandemic. How, first of all, could you tell us what, you know, tell the listeners what separation anxiety is in a nutshell? And then what is it about teaching them from afar that is actually pretty effective?
Yeah, absolutely. So separation anxiety is kind of a catch-all term, kind of like we use Kleenex to mean tissue or tissue to mean Kleenex. Separation anxiety, the general pet dog population and most trainers think about it as a dog who can't stay home alone. Technically, separation anxiety, a classic case of separation anxiety, is a key attachment to one person. The dog can't be comfortable anywhere without that person, even if they're with another person. What most dogs, at least in my case, experience are isolation anxiety or isolation distress, meaning that they could stay home with mom or dad or Aunt Mabel, but they just can't be home alone. They have that panic when people aren't with them. So people are more and more talking about separation related behaviors, which covers both separation anxiety and isolation anxiety or isolation distress.
So I want to ask you about, is it something that you would see in a puppy? Does it develop later? You know, and how do you know that that's what the dog is suffering from, especially if you adopt a rescue dog? How do you know that this is what's going on with the dog?
So I would say yes and yes to your in answer to your question. Yes, puppies can suffer from separation anxiety. Oftentimes, a puppy may have, when there is normal separation anxiety in a puppy, that happens when they leave their litter. I mean, think what about an alien world it is for a puppy to leave their litter and then be transported into a weird human world. You know, most people will try to optimize absences and alone time with puppies, or they should. But even sometimes with the most perfect optimization of alone time with that puppy, a puppy may still develop separation anxiety. And through 40 years of research, there really is no pinpoint to causation. And I think many people, including myself, believe there can be a genetic component. And like many genetic components, they don't necessarily present until some perhaps significant emotional event. And so an example I use with my clients is a former dog of mine. Before I was a dog trainer, knew nothing about, you know, counter conditioning or desensitization or what I should do with him. I left him in a boarding facility that was metal. I came back 2 days later and the owner of the boarding facility said, I'm sorry, but he totally shredded his bed last night. I said, oh my gosh, he's never chewed anything. He said, well, we had a really bad thunderstorm. It's a really nasty storm. So now that I know what I know, I'm sure he was just stressed and scared out of his poor little brain. And he was ripping that bed apart as a symptom of his stress. Had he, my opinion, Lisa Wagoner's opinion, had he been genetically predisposed to separation anxiety, then that might have been the significant emotional event that would cause him to be fearful of being alone at home.
You mentioned some of these sort of the not symptoms, but how you can identify that's what a dog's going through. So how do you know if a dog is going through separation anxiety? What is he going to display?
So dogs who display separation anxiety display body language that is above and beyond what's normal stress-related behaviors. So common symptoms are panting, pacing, drooling, uncontrollable loss of bowels or bladder immediately after the owner leaves, or sometime after the owner leaves, howling, self-mutilation, any suite. I mean, that's a suite of behaviors, and any one dog could experience multiple or maybe only one of those behaviors. So I think it's really important for every dog guardian in the world to have a camera video their dog at some point in time when they're gone to see what their dog does. There are dogs who may have mild symptoms. And so the guardian may think, oh, he's just a little stressed. Another dog who is anxious may be barking his little heart out. However, how do we know internally what that dog is feeling? It's the outward display of symptoms may be different. Can't remember the study. Gosh, Victoria, it was in Britain, but someone did thermal imaging on dogs with separation anxiety. And whether the dog was slightly drooling, panting and pacing, or barking and scratching on the door, the level of anxiety inside was the same.
Is it one of these like a medical condition, if left untreated, it gets worse?
In my opinion, and yes, I think that with any phobia or fear like that, if left untreated, it most always will exacerbate. So it's so important for guardians to find help. First of all, to understand, does their dog experience panting, pacing, whining, barking when they're away? Even dogs who experience or display those symptoms may wear themselves out after an hour or two, be worn out, appear to be not stressed, but then will start up again. So filming your dog in some way, shape, or form, we all walk around with a camera in our hands these days called our phone. So it's very easy to set your phone up. We usually have several mobile devices at our house. Set one up, film the dog, come back, and take a look at see what really is happening with your dog's behavior when you're away.
I want to take a quick break to talk to you for a minute about one of my very favorite weekends of the entire year, the Dog Behavior Conference. So for years, we hosted the Dog Behavior Conference as an in-person event in the UK. But when COVID-19 hit, we turned the conference into an online event and opened it up to the rest of the world. The end result being, it's turned into a truly transformative virtual event that brings together like-minded dog people from all over the world for a weekend of learning, connecting, and inspiration. This year, I'm thrilled to have brought in over a dozen of my friends from every area of the dog world to join me as presenters. Our speakers are dog trainers, veterinary behaviorists, thought leaders, behavioral scientists, and even the world's leading psychoacoustician. Over 3 days, we'll be providing a level of content you can't find anywhere else in a really supportive, connected, inviting environment. Even though it's an online event, we're able to come together between presentations, during live Q&As with speakers, and via the DBC experts' amazing interactive discussions. The DBC is open to everybody. Behavior geeks like me, dog owners like me, dog trainers like me, dog walkers, groomers, sitters, daycare operators, rescue and shelter workers or volunteers, every other type of pet professional in the field. Because we're all constantly learning, me included, And every year I leave the DBC feeling invigorated and inspired to do more great things. So I hope you'll join us this April the 16th to 18th online for the 2021 Dog Behavior Conference. Registration is open now, and your ticket gets you full access to all 3 days of the event, plus 1 year's access to recordings of every minute of the conference. You can register now at positively.com/DBC. That's positively.com/DBC. Come join us and get inspired. Find out how to take your love of dogs to the next level. I'll see you online. When you say the word panic, not in the case of every dog, but when you're talking about separation anxiety to the extreme, it truly is. It's almost like a panic attack.
It is a I liken it to a panic attack in humans. The dog is not acting from a logical point of view. They literally think they can't live alone without their person. And so the dogs need help and the guardians need help. One thing I want guardians to know for sure, you did not cause this condition.
I think that's really important for people to know.
It's very important. You know, we as a species, as a human species, if something happens in our life or our dog's life, we're really quick to blame ourselves. What is it? Did I do something wrong? How did I cause this? Absolutely not. You did not cause it, nor does your dog sleeping in your bed, going on car rides with you, following you as a Velcro dog to and from different rooms. That does not necessarily turn into separation anxiety. Boy, my former girl Willow and even my girl Kaylee now, they are Velcro dogs attached to my hip. Middle of the night, bathroom run, the dogs are going to be with me. But they don't have separation anxiety. So that constant following does not necessarily equate to a dog developing or experiencing separation anxiety.
So what do you do if you find that you have a dog with separation anxiety? How do you help them?
So the protocol that we use as certified separation anxiety trainers is desensitization. So desensitization is introducing a stimulus at a low enough intensity so that the dog doesn't react to that stimulus. So if you think about separation anxiety, it's not really a stimulus that's causing the anxiety. It's the lack of that stimulus. It's the person is out of the house. So I call desensitization the gold standard for separation anxiety. So we're creating a multi-step behavior plan for guardians that takes into consideration, and I do a video assessment and video meeting with people first. I understand their leaving routine, their departure routine, everything they do before leaving the house and then after closing the door. And I understand that, I take it apart, and then I put it back together in a way to introduce the dog or expose the dog to little bitty microscopic absences. So an owner might be stepping out of the house for only 5 seconds and stepping back in. And I randomize, I variable, make the behavior plan variable so that we keep the dog guessing. The dog never knows what the next step is going to be. And then over time, we raise that criteria. So we get those seconds turn into minutes, those minutes turn into blocks of time, and blocks of time turn into, you know, reaching the owner's absence goal.
So you're really talking
about... That's a very short explanation.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a beautiful explanation. You're really talking about varying the picture in a way. And we're very ritualistic as human beings. We like our rituals and we have leaving rituals. We do similar things every single time we leave. And the dog picks up on those, on our behavior. And then that anxiety builds and builds and builds until they know you're going to go. So dogs are ritualistic too. But now you're changing the picture for them. You actually going outside the door doesn't always mean that you're going to be going for a long time.
Absolutely. And I always tell my clients that we're going to play the absence game. So the dog does begin to think of it as a game. It's like the first few times, like, oh, what what are they doing? But we're keeping the dog. I want to help everyone understand, we're keeping the dog below their stress threshold. Remember, desensitization, presenting a stimulus at a low enough intensity that the dog doesn't react. So that's why that initial video meeting, and you ask about a virtual training, that initial video meeting with a client, just like we're, you know, we do all day, every day with Zoom these days, we're meeting, I'm watching as the client leaves, I'm watching the dog, I'm getting a baseline behavior, and I'm not watching to see that dog tip over into panic. What I'm watching is, in order to be able to discern the tiny little stress behaviors that that dog begins to display and how those behaviors present before they tip over, because that's where I need to create the plan so the dog can be comfortable while we're practicing what I'll call those absence rehearsals.
What happens if you have a dog, say you adopt a rescue dog from a shelter, who already is beyond that tipping point, who just is already at that full-on panic mode when you leave?
So it's important to, first of all, understand that and find help right away. Find help right away. The sooner the client gets help, the better. And confinement is not a fix. Confinement anxiety is comorbid with separation anxiety, as our sound phobias. So it hurts my heart so much to see these gruesome heavy metal cages that are marketed as a solution to separation anxiety. It is not.
It is not. And I can attest to that. I mean, I've treated a lot of dogs with separation anxiety, and Scooby comes to mind. And if you want to see Scooby's story, you can see it on YouTube on It's Me or the Dog channel. And Scooby was really panicked and very frustrated when his owners left. They both worked. So, of course, there were going to be times when he was left alone. And so the trainers came in. And first of all, a shock collar was put on to try and stop him from chewing and destroying the house. And then they had a great idea, as that wasn't working, to put him in a big sturdy crate in the garage. So that at least he would be contained and he couldn't destroy anything. Well, they did this, they left, and then they get a phone call that their dog is wandering around the neighborhood. Scooby had got out of the crate and chewed through the garage door to get Absolutely. Out. That is panic. And confining, I don't know whether Lisa, that you've seen similar things, that dogs that do have separation anxiety issues don't really do very well in confinement at all.
Not at all. Not at all. And boy, you know, I had a client call once concerned about their dog, and they were putting 48 pounds of bricks in front of the dog's crate to try to keep the dog in. And again, when you don't understand, I mean, people just don't know what they don't know. You know, it's my favorite expression for life. You know, I don't know what I don't know about being brain surgery, and I will never be a brain surgeon, but we don't know what we don't know. And so it's common to think, how do I stop this? How can I make this stop? And try to focus only on the symptom, but we need to really, you know, dig deep and understand that the dog is coming from a point of anxiety. We need to treat the anxiety first.
Is it fair to say that this is going to take some time? This is not something you can teach. I mean, Victoria taught my dog leave it in 10 minutes, but this is not a quick fix.
You're right, Holly. I liken it personally to a person who has post-traumatic stress. So we can't just say, oh, Victoria, get over it. You know, just get over it. It's nothing to worry about. It's real to that person, and it's real to that dog. So desensitization does take time. However, guardians will see their dog begin to truly relax very quickly. I was working with a wonderful couple in the UK. I mean, because we're virtual, this work spans, you know, all continents, no geographic boundaries at all. And we were, I don't know, week one or two of our protocol, and we might have had 30 seconds outside the door. The client said, I know we don't have any duration outside the door yet, but I've never seen him relax and stay chilled on the couch while we put on our jackets and walked to the door. So they were seeing the dog begin to relax. And think about it. You know, if we as people are over our own stress threshold every day, and haven't we been lately with COVID for February or March? It's hard to get rid of that stress easily. So it affects, we can have physiological complications. Dogs who are always stressed oftentimes present with allergies, gastrointestinal issues, or autoimmune issues. So it's an emotional issue, but it's also a physiological issue for dogs.
I have a couple questions from viewers, if you don't mind me reading them to you guys. I'm going to give you this one, Lisa. We sort of touched on it, but you can maybe give us a little bit more specifics. This is from Claire in Michigan, and she says she has a four-month-old puppy that whines when she's left alone. Does this mean she will go on to develop separation anxiety as she gets older? And then how can she prevent it?
So without seeing the behavior, without seeing exactly what's happening, it could be some demand related behaviors. The puppy may not have been optimized to be alone, may not really be separation anxiety, but the puppy needs help. The puppy needs help learning how to be home alone, and a desensitization protocol will work perfectly for that puppy too. So I do, with puppy clients, sometimes it's a little challenging to tease out, is it kind of normal puppy separation anxiety, or are we moving into kind of full-blown separation anxiety? And if we don't know, we're still going to do a desensitization protocol, because we know that that's going to help the puppy. We created a free downloadable handout on the Cold Nose College website on our resources page on how to optimize dogs to prevent separation anxiety during COVID, because you're right, Holly. I think you mentioned early on, we're not leaving our dogs. So it's important, everybody out there who's listening, start creating opportunities to leave your house and leave your dog alone, even if you're just driving around the block and then coming back. In fact, you haven't left your dog alone, do only drive around the block and come back. So make those real life absences, or absence rehearsals, since we can't go anywhere these days, make those very, very short in the beginning. Film your dog while you're away. The camera that most of us CSATs love right now, technology changes over time, are the WISE cameras, W-I-Z-E. They're very inexpensive, easy to put them in multiple rooms of your house. And you can log in from your car and see what's happening with your dog.
Gone are the days when we used to have videos. You had to set up a video camera to watch it. And, you know, and then when we were filming, we had to do monitors and all of that. Thank goodness for our phones now.
That's what you did for me. You set up the big camera when we had to see what my dog was doing. Vic, I want to ask you this question, because I know you have a whole series of music to calm dogs who have anxiety during storms. So you're very in tune with that aspect. So Sam from London wants to know, does leaving the TV or radio on help? And what about music? And I will be honest with you, that's me. My husband thinks I'm absolutely nuts. So I leave the TV on, even, you know, if we're going to be gone for more than an hour, because I feel like it's so quiet in here. At least there's some ambient noise, but I don't know if I'm stressing him out more.
I get asked this question a lot, and I've done some, I've had the fortune to meet and work with the wonderful sound researcher Joshua Leeds from Through a Dog's Ear. And he is one of the nation's leading psychoacousticians. Psychoacoustics is the effect of sound on the nervous system of people, and bioacoustics, the effect of sound on animals. And what he's taught me that certain kinds of music can indeed calm dogs down. And when we're talking about there, we're talking about the effect of music on the nervous system, the effect of sounds on the nervous system. There are sounds and music that can charge up the nervous system, like play your dog heavy metal. That's going to charge it up. It charges us up too as human beings. But in order to discharge the nervous system, playing music like classical music, and now they found reggae, it is actually very, very calming. And so we use it. We use it. But here's the thing. And the reason why we've gotten together to work together and work together for many years is that not only are we just playing music, we've got whole protocols for dogs on how we introduce the music. Because what we don't want to do is the dog, because they can recognize music. And what we don't want to do is to set our dogs up for failure by playing the music just as we leave. So we start playing the music while we're there and whilst we're doing an activity with the dog, or we're massaging the dog. Well, Holly's gone. I think her connection just went, but we're still here. We're going to be talking. Absolutely. She'll join us back again. And so that, by building up a positive association with that, what we're actually doing is creating an environment of calm and of safety, because I feel that a lot of these dogs just don't feel safe. But so we use music, but leaving the television on, it is fine, but you have to, or the radio, but you have to understand that then maybe the dog's not getting an auditory break. And so we've got specially designed music for separation anxiety protocols that actually plays music for a little bit, then stops for 30 minutes, then plays it again, then stops for another 15 minutes, so that the dog does get an auditory break. There's also dog TV. People have dog TV, that specially designed television for canines to watch. And that's been very successful in helping dogs that have anxiety on separation. So there are these various things that we can use, that we can use music to help dogs become less anxious, de-stress, calm, and also works on human beings as well, as long as you give your dog an auditory break.
Yes, I agree. We oftentimes will add music to a protocol as an adjunct to the absence rehearsals. But as you said, Victoria, it's vitally important not to just turn the music on when you're going to leave. You have to play it at other times of the day as well. Otherwise, it only becomes a predictor.
Absolutely.
Do food toys. You know, a dog can still eat when they're stressed. So
when you bring that toy out, that's the separation anxiety toy. That toy means I'm going to leave. No,
absolutely.
The dog gets that toy at different times of the day. It's all about, as you said, and you said something really wonderful, and I've forgotten what it was, but it's like you're changing it up all the time. So the dog never knows
exactly
what's happening. Not that the dog is confused.
Not
building up that anxiety by reading your body language and then triggering that anxiety because, oh my gosh, you're exhibiting now signals and behavior that you're about to leave.
Yeah, we're creating the protocol in such a way so that it does not create a pattern. You said it earlier, you know, we are so ritualistic in our behavior, and dogs are the most keen observationists in the world. They can read, they actually know what we're going to do before we're doing it, because we start to move a muscle and they know. I mean, they're brilliant. They're just so brilliant. And so it's important to be able to break apart that absence rehearsal, put it together in such a way so that we are always keeping the dog comfortable and happy while we're helping them learn to be alone in very small bits of time. But those small bits of time are like compound interest. They're going to build over time to minutes, to talk blocks of time, and then, you know, onward toward hours.
You know, I could talk to you forever, but we're coming to the end of this podcast. But what I am very excited about is that you will be speaking at the Dog Behavior Conference in 2021,
yes, so
April the 16th to 18th. Yes, it's our virtual conference, so it doesn't matter where you are in the world. You can join us. It's 3 days from the 16th to the 18th of April. And Lisa will be speaking about separation anxiety. I encourage you to register. You can go to vsdogtrainingacademy.com/DBC or positively.com/DBC to register for the conference. But if somebody wants to book a consultation, where would they go? How do they find you?
Wonderful. You can go to coldnosecollege.com, click on the separation anxiety button, and there'll be some information there and a questionnaire that you can complete, and it will get right to us. One thing I want to mention that I didn't say is data tracking is very important in our program. All CSETs are using, most of us use Google spreadsheets that we can share with our clients, but there's so many variables that affect a dog's life that we track those. And then we can use that data to drive the dog's success. We can use that data to understand why we might've had a dip in progress, or perhaps a regression or a plateau. We can sort it in a way to determine, oh, look, every time it's only mom who does the protocol, the dog is more comfortable, or less comfortable. Maybe we need to change some things up, or maybe not enough exercise, or too much exercise, or maybe it was a vet visit that day that was very stressful on the dog. So the protocol may have, the results of the protocol the day before might have been great and not so good on the day the dog went to the vet. So we can sleuth a lot of things with really appropriate data tracking.
Very data-driven training. Holly is back with us.
I'm back. It was like, I guess this is a very 2020 where you just come and go randomly and you have no control. So I apologize about that. Our internet went down, but you know, 2020 after all. So.
Exactly.
It's life in 2020, and you know, technology gremlins happen.
I think people really accept it now. It's not a problem. Oh, okay, the internet. There you go.
And I'm happy. It is. My dogs didn't bark during this podcast, so you know, they were nice and quiet.
That's nice. See?
Thanks to the Kongs and the management tools that they're enjoying right now.
There you go. You see, oh, thank goodness for that. Oh, that enrichment with management, but that's another subject. Thank you so much, Lisa, for joining us.
You're
and
so
I do
welcome.
Encourage thank everyone you. To come and listen to Lisa during the conference. And we've come to the end of our podcast for today. What does the rest of your week look like, Holly?
Well, I'll be doing just this, Zooming for work and with my family and friends, and then every once in a while dropping off and exploring the internet and coming back. So just basically what we've seen. How about you, Lisa? What's your week look like?
You know, more of the same. You know, it's life in Zoom these days, isn't it?
It's great. I rue the day I'm going to have to put on my pre-COVID pants. Like, that's going to be a little disappointing. Talk about needing therapy. I think that's what it'll be tough, but we'll get through this.
Yeah. You know, my week is, you know, I love what I do. So it's so much fun. And as Victoria knows, I'm, you know, as well as being on faculty, I'm a faculty advisor. So I'm meeting with a myriad of students, you know, all week, every week via Zoom, and watching them gain skills, you know, to be professional dog trainers. So, you know, life is good. More people are going to be out there helping people and their dogs, training positively.
Do you both think, and I was just wondering this, I know we touched on it earlier, but the fact that now we have become such a Zoom society, right? Like before it was like, oh yeah, I can help you from a distance, but people didn't really embrace it because it was so unusual. But now that we've sort of been forced down this avenue, do you feel like we're going to see a lot more dogs and animals, you know, getting help that they need because people are going to embrace this more? This the one good thing out of all of this.
There are so many benefits to virtual training, especially with aggression and people aggression and reactivity cases, because we can spend a lot of time with the client. The dog doesn't know we're peeking through the keyhole of the door, educating the client relative to how we're going to begin working with their dog. There's a lot of upfront work to do in that respect.
It is so much less stressful for dogs that, you know, that are very uncomfortable around people. Doing virtual consultations is excellent.
And what my clients love is when we're meeting, I can record the meeting, the training session. You know, I demo with my dog. They begin working with their dog. I'm recording. I'm coaching them as they're doing it. They can play that back and learn from that again and again and again. So, wow, it's wonderful. And more people are realizing that I'd just like to stay home in my pajamas and train my dog.
Yeah, or my fleece pants.
Yes,
2021 is looking better already.
All right, guys. Well, thank you so much, Lisa, for joining us.
And
Holly,
thank you,
Lisa.
I will see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Take care, everybody. Bye.
Thanks for tuning in to Victoria Stilwell's Positively Podcast. For more information, visit positively.com. Get connected on Facebook and YouTube as Victoria Stilwell or follow her on Twitter at Victoria S. Be sure to tune in next time as Victoria helps to change dogs' lives positively.